Welcome to the Portage County Safety Council podcast. We hope you enjoy today's community spotlight.
Hi, it's Mike with the Portage County Safety Council. I'm here with Tracy Larum from Family and Community Services. Welcome, Tracy.
Hi.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do for Family and Community Services?
Sure. I'm the Director of Housing Services, and part of that is overseeing transitional housing programs, permanent supportive housing programs. But my main program is Miller Community House, which is the only emergency shelter for Portage County.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit about Miller Community House?
Sure. We serve about 200 individuals a year that are experiencing homelessness. And of those 200, about 80 to 90 of those are children. It is general population homelessness. Miller Community House is unique in the sense that it serves the general population. So we serve senior citizens. We serve single parents, two-parent households, single adults. We serve veterans. If there's no room at the shelter, we do serve victims of domestic violence. And again, we serve children of all ages. So we have teenagers in the facility that are going to school. We have grade school children. We have newborns. In 2017, we had 5 newborns spend their first night away from the hospital at Miller Community House.
So a lot of programs, Tracy, have a minimum qualifications, maybe an income limit, these kind of things. Is there any kind of qualifications that would qualify or disqualify someone in need that may want to participate in Miller Community House?
Basically, it's homelessness. If you're experiencing homelessness, you're eligible. If you have a low income and you need our assistance, we are there to help anybody. The only thing that would limit someone's ability to enter Miller is if they have any open warrants or any violent charges within the last 5 years. Aside from that, we take everybody as long as they're experiencing homelessness.
So if someone's in need, how long can they stay and how long would they qualify for services in Miller House?
Well, because we receive state and federal funding, we are obligated to abide by their regulations on that, which is 30 to 40 days. So a family or an individual can enter Miller Community House and stay for that time period. Now, we do extend individuals if they have active housing plans in place, but we do average about 39 days per resident.
So take me to the process. If I'm someone in need, how do I get in? What is it going to look like? What's the first few days and maybe that first month going to look like?
We have a crisis line. We are one of the 2 crisis lines for Portage County. So our phone lines are ringing all the time and we are open 24/7, 365 days a year. So the phone lines are the crisis line and that's typically where about 90% of our residents come from. They first start with that phone call. Hello, I'm homeless. I'm sleeping in my car. My mom just kicked me out. And so from that moment, we take basic information to try to determine if we can divert them to better and more appropriate services. Maybe they don't need to enter the shelter. But if they do need to enter the shelter, if they are literally street homeless, we get them in typically that same day or the following day, and we can work and collaborate with the Housing and Emergency Supportive Service Department where they can possibly put them in a hotel for a couple days until we have a bed available, because we do have 22 beds in our facility and those are full all the time. And our waiting list is about 12 to 15 individuals, and those are non-street homeless individuals. Those are individuals that are staying with someone and they can stay just a little bit longer. So we'll still work with them to get them into the facility or divert them to a more appropriate program. But the individuals that enter immediately are those street homeless individuals. So once they enter, what happens is right away they come in and they have belongings, or sometimes they don't have belongings. But we immediately, want to set them at ease, because we recognize that if you're crossing the threshold of homeless shelter, you're experiencing trauma. And, you've realized and you know that everybody around you realizes that you don't have the supports in place, and that's why you're here. So we know that, and what we do immediately is offer to feed them. Do you want a cup of coffee? Do you want something to drink? Are you hungry? And we give them a tour of the facility. After that tour, typically the nerves have died down significantly, because a lot of people are expecting the warehouse of cots, and it's simply not what we are. We are a house. We are a home. There's a living room. There's a resource center. There's a teen center. There's a large dining room area. There's a kitchen where you can cook and prepare your own meals. There's a pantry with, everything you could possibly need. There's a little kid's room, coloring and toys and chalkboards and games and books and DVDs. There's a enclosed outside patio with a playground, private areas where you can go and just, think and be by yourself. And then our bedrooms are private bedrooms. And we do have large rooms where, if it's a single mother, one child, and another single mother with one child, they can share a space. So we can, get up to 5 or 6 beds in a room. So once we've given that tour and shown them how homey it feels, then typically, you know, they're calmer. And then we can go into what is our intake process on that first day. And it's very simplistic information. What's your name? What's your date of birth? We try to get their file started because we know that, you know, their housing plan is what we're going to be working on those next 30 to 40 days. So we have to get the basic information out of the way first and we create their file. They are told at that time, you know, after we get the basic information, and I'm telling you, this session takes maybe 10, 20 minutes, you know, based on their emotional state. And then we show them to their bed, which is made up, and they've got a fresh set of towels on their bed. They have a freezer bag that is full of all the toiletries that they need and any other members of their family. And there's a pamphlet there that's welcoming them and giving them advice on, you know, how to handle the stress of this moment. It's okay. And our staff are constantly walking around and greeting and, hey, you're new. How can I help you? And so that first day is all about just let's, you know, give them the support that they need emotionally. And then day two happens. And that's when they sit down with our on-site case manager. And she sits down with them privately and goes over all of the barriers that has created the situation that they found themselves in. So some people may be experiencing multiple evictions. Some people maybe they have a criminal background. Some have income, but it's not enough. Some don't have any income. Some are applying for disability. It's a multitude of things and it's a combination of those things. And so she helps sift through all of those barriers and starts creating a plan with them based on what their desires are for housing and what their goals are for themselves or their family. And so then she meets with them periodically then throughout the week. And one of the nice things about Miller is that not only do we have all the space that I've already described to you, and we've got the case manager that's on site in her space, we have the housing specialist office in their space, we have my space that is also open door policy and they can stop in anytime they want, questions, comments, concerns, but we also have a space that is private for outside supportive services and case management so that if they sit down with our case manager on that second day and they are seeking mental health counseling, within the next couple of days, we have someone from one of the local area agencies or within our own agency, a counselor or a therapist that comes on site and meets with them privately so that they don't have the barrier, the added barrier of transportation or just trying to find the place and the stress that they're, you know, going through. So within a week's time, they've already done their intake. They've, you know, created this nice safe space. And a lot of times individuals, it's been a long time for them to even be in a bed. I've shown individuals to their room and turned around after showing them their bed and they're standing there crying. And they explain, you know, to me, I had an 8-month pregnant woman last year and that's exactly what happened. I turned around and she was crying. And I said, are you okay? Do you need me to get something? And she said, no, it's just been 4 months since I've been able to sleep in a bed.
Wow.
She was sleeping in a car that whole entire time. So, you know, in that week's time, we've surrounded them with a safe, comfortable place that they can start focusing on their housing goals and not stressing about where am I going to stay or what am I going to have to do to stay here. And they've already met with our case manager who has helped them sift through everything that tends to be overwhelming to them and they don't know where to start first. And she's able to say, okay, this is where we start first. And then she can meet with the other supportive services in our community to collaborate with, whether it's mental health, drug addiction, it could be veteran services with the VA, it could be domestic violence assistance, it could be parenting assistance, it could be Help Me Grow. There's a multitude of services in Portage County and they all come on site to help clients. So it's an impressive facility to say the least because we wrap services literally around our clients.
Yeah, there's two things I'd like to hit on with this is one, just the physical environment of Miller House. I remember years ago going through there, it was kind of bland walls, just real basic, plain.
Right.
It didn't really have that institutional feel that an outsider might think about a shelter. You know, most of the time I think about a shelter before I'd experienced Miller Community House. How you think of the big, like Hurricane Katrina, you're in the Superdome with cots all over the place and garbage and sleeping bags and these kind of things. But when you walk in Miller Community House now, the walls are painted. There's murals and artwork. I actually come back, I'm like, this is more comfortable than my home.
Right.
Than my physical home. The furniture there. And I know there's been a lot of volunteers from different organizations that come and put a lot to it. And it's just real impressive, the artwork. One of the most impressive things that I found that it's exciting just to walk through there is the rooms aren't numbered or lettered.
Right.
They're actually named. Can you go ahead and like describe that process, what you're thinking, and has it changed the environment of the Miller House as far as like a resident's concerned?
Absolutely. I'm glad you noticed that. You know, we have gone through a dramatic change in the last 5 years. When I first arrived there, it was, as you described, kind of institutional. And it's just, you know, by no fault of just, you know, trying to keep the doors open and serve the masses. But we were, you know, through, you know, creative management and whatnot, able to address that physical appearance and recognize the effects that has on our incoming residents and the residents that are staying staying there for a period of time. So one of the things, like you mentioned, it was all white facility and the rooms were all lettered. Everything, you know, you're in room A, you're in room D, and this is your refrigerator and it's refrigerator number 4. And so one of the things that we did when we removed the white walls and made everything more earth tones to make it more warm feeling and inviting when you walk in the door, it's like this rich golden orange color and it immediately evokes that sense of warmth and coziness. And the bedrooms are, you know, individually painted and they're all very comforting colors. And so going along with that earth tone, we renamed the rooms after trees. So rather than telling someone that you are going to room A, you're going to the oak room. And so it seems like such a small, insignificant element, but it actually is very impactful to not, because you're taking away that identity of I'm just a number. And now you're giving them something that, you know, is more comforting and it's more natural and it's not just a label anymore. So I'm glad you recognize that. It's really important to us.
Now, have you noticed a shift in the ecosystem there, environment, from doing things and changing the colors? I know there's different clients that can only stay there 30 days at a time, mm-hmm. but is there a different shift in attitude or just the demeanor, even by staff, of like, hey, this is something more meaningful? I mean, I could imagine coming in almost like a hotel room. I'm in room A, B, or 101, however that works. But here I'm coming to the oak room, mm-hmm. and then there's like nature, there's artwork, there's this soft color that just really, it's warming, inviting, it feels like home, mm-hmm. and probably nicer than many people actually have experienced in their private lives before then, even before homelessness.
It is. And best telling identifier that it's working and it does affect them is the fact that, you know, in our follow-up processing, they take that with them. When they get their apartments or their home after they've left us, they are also having lavender-scented things there, which we do
wow.
to kind of, you know, comfort the facility by scent. They're putting, you know, artwork, and they recognize, you know, one of the simple things that many of our parents never considered is using their own kids' artwork to decorate their walls. And that's something that we do at the shelter a lot. We frame the children's artwork and we put them up in their actual bedrooms. So they will have framed artwork in their bedrooms and they will take that with them. And so the parents never considered something like that. And they know the instant feeling that that gives of family and togetherness. So even if they can't afford to go buy actual artwork, they recognize that, oh, I do this and it'll feel different. So that's the best telling thing, is that they've taken that feeling with them and they recognize that this is better, you know, than just white walls and labels and no artwork.
Yeah, the second thing that you mentioned that I think is real important is if I'm experiencing homelessness, I couldn't imagine the amount of emotions, the anxiety, the depression, the stress that one person could go through, that you could be going through in that process. And Miller House has a self-care program that many people might just say, well, it's a shelter, you're just giving them a bed and different things. They really don't really see what's going on the inside. Can you tell us a little bit about the self-care program and how that works and how that's helped people transition into self-sufficiency?
Absolutely. A couple of years ago, I started recognizing that I needed to see the differences between how Miller operated in surrounding shelters, or at least other shelters in the state of Ohio. So I started going on tours of those facilities, and I would get in the car almost every time afterward, and there was much that I was impressed with. But there was a couple things that kind of bothered me, and the first and foremost thing is that a lot of them operate like the Hurricane Katrina warehouse experience that you described, where we have 30 beds, everybody lines up, and number 31, I'm sorry, and the door shuts. And so they get to sleep during the night, and then at 8 o'clock in the morning, the doors open and everybody has to leave, and they shut the doors and they have to figure out where to go during the day. So what's unique about Miller is that we don't do that. They actually are in a home. They can work that third shift job and they can accept that third shift job, which often they don't do if they're in the other type of environment, because where am I going to sleep during the day? I can't sleep in a laundromat and then go back to work. And so with our facility, they can accept those often. That's the first ranking position, you know, at an employer. So we recognize that, and they can accept that job and they can start working and they can sleep, you know, during the day and go back to work, because that's part of the case plan is, you know, the income and getting employed, and we link them up with services there. But then the other thing that I recognized on those tours was that I did like the concept that everybody was getting up and starting their day with something positive. So I developed the self-care sessions, and it's Monday through Friday. And initially I thought, okay, I had a couple problems. How am I going to afford this? Because as you might imagine, social service programs, especially homeless shelters, we don't have an abundance of money. So I can't afford to have a facilitator come in and teach a self-care session. So that was my first thing that I had to tackle, was reach out to my community and see if we had anybody, one person that would be willing to volunteer their time to come in and teach an hour-long self-care session in the morning from like 9 to 10. Well, the reaction was, incredible. I had too many. I couldn't even schedule people enough because I had so many people in the community that said, I could teach yoga. I could do creative writing. I'm a professor. I can talk to them about creating goals. I can teach them about, you know, music and art therapy. It's just an abundance of individuals. So that was easily remedied. And then my second, what I thought again would be a hurdle was, how am I going to get our residents to buy into this? You know, they're experiencing extreme trauma. You know, I'm in a homeless shelter. I have my children in a homeless shelter. How am I going to approach that mother and say, hey, you should go to yoga? And so I really struggled with how could I get them interested in something like this? And I thought, I'm going to have to mandate this and make a requirement, much like the other shelters did with the morning prayer. I'm going to have to mandate this. And so by pure fate, I did not get the paperwork typed up and printed up and posted on the doors that said, hey, you're required to get up and be in this room at 9 o'clock. And so the first day, we had two individuals show up in the living room with our yoga instructor. And at the end of it, you know, they always end the same, like, okay, everybody, what are you going to work on today? Let's take this positive feeling with us. And this is what tomorrow's session is. So yoga ended. Tomorrow's session is creative writing with Professor Karen. And there were four people on Tuesday. And then, you know, at the end of that session, again, have a good day. Here's your goals. Let's be motivated. Let's be positive. Let's get along. And tomorrow's session is going to be talking about mindfulness and gratitude. And eight people showed. By the end of the week, I had everyone in the house, and I never once said it was required or mandatory. That is proof enough that people want to have time to themselves. They want to have that moment to think about themselves and internalize and address the things that they haven't had the time to do because they've been in crisis and they've been experiencing trauma. And all of a sudden, I'm with this woman who's saying, let's stretch, and this is what yoga is. And even though it seemed like, how are we ever going to get them to come to this room to do this? We never thought and considered how they hadn't had that opportunity to be free to experience that. And so it's wildly successful. Everyone comes into these sessions not knowing half the time what today is going to be, and they still get something out of it. And the biggest and best part of it is that, again, you know, much like I've described the artwork and the colors, we do follow-up care with our residents and we check in with them. And one of the most remarkable things is when they say, and I'm still doing yoga. So it's been incredibly successful, and everyone, including the staff, has seen the value that is behind just managing your self-care.
One final question, Tracy, is if someone comes in, this is a common understanding of homelessness, that a lot of times there's mental health issues that are going on, relationship issues. So if someone comes in with mental health or those relationship issues, what does your staff do?
Well, our staff are trained, first of all. So we have staff trained for motivational interviewing, which is a technique of communicating with our clients and residents in a way that gets them to recognize things without us having to tell them, you know, what the next steps need to be or how they need to address certain situations. We're also trained in trauma-informed care. So that obviously gives us some sensitivity training and a better understanding of how to approach individuals that are experiencing some kind of a trauma. And again, like I said, everyone walking over the threshold of a shelter is experiencing trauma. But then we also have specialists that will come in and do sessions either with self-care, or we will do evening sessions or weekend sessions that they will offer those services as well to address. And again, with the case management, if someone expresses a need or an interest, you know, in addressing mental health or addiction or something of that nature, our case manager immediately refers them and hooks them up with someone who will meet with them on site.
Great. So no one's left behind. So every need
Absolutely
that comes
not.
In, there's a case manager working, there's some kind of support worker that's going through their case, they're evaluating different stuff. When someone says, hey, I think I really need counseling, I need anger management, I need some addiction services, you guys are like a little hub that kind of sends them out and refers out. If anyone's in need and could utilize the services that Miller Community House provides, what's one way they can contact and maybe get on the crisis hotline that you mentioned or apply for the services that you have to offer?
Portage County has to report to the state two access points for crisis, and Miller Community House is one of those two. Housing and Emergency Supportive Services, the HESS department, they are also an access point, but those are during business hours. So again, we are 7 days, 24 hours. So if an individual calls our main line, which is 330 673 0034. Once the staff person answers the phone, which can happen 24 hours a day, then they just explain their situation, and that staff person from that moment takes on their situation and tries to either divert them to more appropriate services, or if they're street homeless, they get them into the facility almost immediately. So that's the best way. They can also stop by the facility. It's at 1211 Anita Drive, and that's in Kent. So if they show up, you know, we will certainly provide the same services. If anyone goes to any social service in Portage County, if they go to Coleman Professional Services, if they go to Job and Family Services, if they go to Town Hall 2, if at any of those points in Portage County where those services are provided, someone says, I'm experiencing homelessness or I need help housing, they're going to divert them to Miller Community House as we are the access point. So very easy for someone to get a hold of us if they need us.
I really enjoy this information that you give.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I love to brag about Miller. It's a beautiful facility, and we do impact lives. I mean, we have 200 people a year. So imagine 200 people a year not having a place to go.
Well, it's unbelievable to think right here in Portage County that there's a need for that. And
right.
We know it exists everywhere, but it's still something that in our everyday life we can ignore or just keep on in a daily grind and stay busy and not realize that there's 200 people in need that might not have a place to stay.
Right.
So thank you for everything that you do.
You're welcome.
And thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. To learn more about how your company can earn up to a 4% Ohio BWC premium rebate by becoming an active member of the Portage County Safety Council, please visit our website at www.portagecountysafetycouncil.wordpress.com. The preceding information is for entertainment purposes only. Views expressed may not reflect the views of any affiliated or sponsoring individuals or organizations. Listeners should carefully weigh information provided and seek advice from an appropriate professional before implementing. Listener discretion is advised.